Today, I am delighted to introduce to you Alexandre Renzo, CEO at CaseWise. And as we go through this session today, you will see why I have invited Alexandre to share his perspective and his entrepreneurial journey with you. And I'm sure you're going to be very inspired by Alexandre's story and the story of CaseWise. Alexandre, welcome.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much.
So let's start with some context setting. You have built a self-financed enterprise software company from London and scaled it to $24 million in annual revenue. Tell us what CaseWise does.
So globally, first, CaseWise is a software organization. We develop a software to help organizations run more efficiently globally, and our clients are mainly Fortune 2000. So in a simple way, Fortune 2000 organizations help our software to document their business processes, mainly to run more efficiently and to reduce the complexity of their business.
And even though the genesis of your company is in London and the initial customer base was in England and France, and we can hear the French accent in your conversation today, the bulk of your customer base today and the revenue base is in the U.S., correct?
That's correct, yes.
So what I would be interested in digging into is, what are the key strategies that you've been successful with in growing the U.S. business? We have an international audience, and many of them want to do what you've done, is start a company somewhere else in some other part of the world, but they all want to come into the much faster adoption, faster growth U.S. market. So what can our audience learn from your experience?
Yes, as you mentioned, it's been a journey. We started, years ago in London. Then we did roll out our strategy back to France before going to the U.S. During the journey, what I've learned is every market is very different. Different maturity and different expectation from our clients. If you speak to a huge organization, doesn't matter, like L'Oréal in Paris or L'Oréal in New York, that got very different, maturity. So what we have learned over the, what I've learned over the few years is to adapt the offering. For example, as I mentioned to you, we are a software vendor. On the last 3 years when we have opened our offices in Los Angeles, we had to transform our business model by becoming a solution vendor. The big difference with a software vendor versus a solution is we provide also consulting services around. Why? Because our U.S. customers want an issue to be solved. They don't want to buy a product. They don't want to buy a software. They want you to come and solve an issue. And that has been a big, big difference in our approach.
How do they find you? How do you get into an account, to a Fortune 500 or a Global 2000 account? How do you get in? How do they find you? And how do they think of you to call when they have an issue and they want it solved?
Well, that's a great question. It is true, CaseWise is not Microsoft. We are a niche player, leader in our industry, but still not well known. So a couple of things. The first thing, we have leveraged our international clients from Europe. As I mentioned, you can imagine Prudential or Experian. Experian is a UK business, very well known in the US too. So we start to look to do mapping. What European customers are also based in the US and, part of the Fortune 2000. So we started by the easy way to do so. And then to acquire new names in the US, we try to think, okay, who are going to be the buyer? Globally, the customer, signing the purchase order are CXO. So, CIO, CEO, or COO of this huge organization. So what I've done, I didn't want to go to the standard trade show because they're very expensive. On the offering, the competition is massive. So we started to run some sort of exclusive events, like CIO dinners. So for example, mm-hmm. I started last year to run one CIO dinner in LA. What I did, I asked one of my clients, CIO, to present this use case on what value he has been able to generate by using CaseWise or technology. We acquired some data, you know, we pinged all the CIOs from Fortune 2000. The first time we only had 11 people turning up, 11 CIOs, but it was good enough for us because you are talking to the decision maker straight away. From these 11 people, in less than 6 months, we closed two major deals, Experian, the US, NBC in Los Angeles, and we have been replicating this model, this type of event, where globally, at the end of the day, our clients promote CaseWise. And people, what they want to know is not who is CaseWise, it's, you know, what have we been able to achieve for our clients, and can we replicate?
So on that note, you are a business process management vendor. Where in the clientele that you have sold to so far, what use cases have been kind of the big use cases that you have been able to replicate in multiple places? And typically in these kinds of companies, the kind of company that you are running, the use cases are how you get into an account, right? You solve a problem for somebody, deliver great ROI, and then replicate it elsewhere. So I'm sure in your CIO dinners, these use cases come up. Can you share with us one or two use cases that have been really powerful for you?
You are right. So we've got two main use cases. The first one, we are talking about IT modernization. So how do we help organizations to modernize their IT system? So globally, you know, we help them to document their technology, you know, layers to understand what they've got, because they're a complex organization, huge organization, and to move to the digital. You know, we're talking about digital disruption. One of the excellent case studies we have done in the U.S. and California the last couple of years is we have helped one massive organization to rationalize, to reduce the number of applications they're using, and to save $250 million on their annual IT budget. So you can appreciate when you deliver this sort of return investment, it's, of course, a massive quick win. And we have promoted this use case, you know, to different CIOs. And, of course, I'm very interested in understanding how we have achieved that. And if we have done it once, why we wouldn't work for them? And just buy, I think, the reference, the use case, and we've been able to, today we've got more than 100 clients in the U.S. by just promoting our references.
So let's actually double-click down on this particular scenario that you're talking about. You've been successful in doing very large deals with some of your large enterprise customers, and if I recall, you one of your deals is $12 million over a three-year period. Tell us a bit more about this kind of deals, and how do you explain your value proposition? How do you establish ROI? What is the process and the workflow of, you know, getting into the account and explaining the value proposition, establishing ROI, and convincing customers to pay that much to a relatively small software company?
I mean, that's a great question. So the approach, because we are aware, as you mentioned, we are, you know, small player versus, you know, the big five, Accenture, Deloitte, who can definitely help, you know, these sort of companies. So we always promote when, you know, to run a pilot. So we say, okay, you understood, you know, what we can achieve. Give us a small scope. We're going to work with you to do a statement of work, and we run a pilot. And if we are successful after 3 months, then we can demonstrate, we can replicate the sort of pilot to a much higher, you know, a scale. So we never try to go straight away for the big project. We want to demonstrate the value on a small size, you know, a clear scope, and then generalize. The project you mentioned, probably by end of 2015, is roughly $15 million revenue for CaseWise in,
on one customer.
2.5 years. That's correct, on one client. And we started the pilot late 2012 in Q4 on a three-month base for $800K. And $800K was still already a big project for us, right?
Already pretty big.
We've been successful. And to answer your question, why this sort of client spends so much money is because we can generate, demonstrate the value. At the end of the day, you are solving an issue, and if you can demonstrate the value it means for this client, it can be priceless. A second example, despite the value, is we help organizations to become compliant because we document the processes and they can show to different regulation bodies that they are compliant. Well, for CEO of a bank, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, doesn't matter the name, well, they don't want to go to jail. So the fact you say, you give me, doesn't matter, $2 million and I can take away this issue for you, it's priceless, right? You just took the problem away and you just let them solve the issue. I think the key message here is to find and define a clear value proposition that you can address, you know, a problem, but a problem that, you know, it represents a serious issue for this organization.
Mm-hmm. So, you've been in business now for quite a while, and you're doing business both in Europe and America. How has the market in Europe changed? Obviously, you're being able to close very large deals in America, and that market is moving very nicely for you. What is happening in your, you know, European business, that is your original business? Is that starting to grow faster? Is the European market accelerating? How does the European market dynamics look today?
Yeah, so the European market is a very interesting and complex market because we've got many countries, many cultures between the French, you know, the Spanish, the Italian, the British. It's all different markets with different culture. So I would say, to answer your question in terms of performance, the French market has been doing extremely well. And, you know, in 2015, we have, you know, even broke our record. So we can see a trend to consolidate, sustaining our global growth in France. The south of Europe is a bit of a tougher market because of the economic downturn. As you may know, Italy, Spain, Portugal have got very high unemployment, or Greece, high unemployment rate, which slowed down the process, you know, to acquire or to invest. Even when they should invest more today to make them, you know, more efficient or leaner, it's a big struggle. We are a small organization. We want to make sure we can sell where we get paid. You know, it's very easy to get a project in Greece to optimize, you know, the efficiency of a government or a company, but we want to make sure we can get paid. You know, that, as many of you know, it's not the revenue you generate, it's cash flow, you know, what is key in our business too. So that's something we are trying to be very prudent. And our investment today is really to support the growth in North America, which is an amazing market for us, on some, you know, very successful markets like, you know, Britain and France. On the other one, we are more careful in terms of investment.
So if a small company, you know, we work with a lot of early stage businesses. If a small business wants to do what you have done, start in Europe, maybe in England or in France, and I think I'm hearing you say that they have to be careful about Southern Europe because of the default issues and so forth from a cash point of view. But is it still viable, given what's going on in Europe, given the, you know, quite slow situation, economic situation in Europe in general, is it still viable to start your business and get it up to a few million dollars in revenue and validation and get the customer going in the hands of, get the product going in the hands of customers, actually? Is that still a valid mode of getting going with enterprise software companies?
Well, it really depends on your strategy, on your objective. If you want to grow market share or revenue or profitability, you know, and as you said, if you are a young, you know, startup, clearly cash is still an issue. You want more references. I will say for American companies to try to grow in Europe, my advice would be to start with England.
My question is, European companies, can they start in Europe? Because, and I'll tell you why I'm asking this question, is because, you know, you're talking about, you know, doing a dinner in Los Angeles with 11 CIOs. You have to get to that point, right? 11 CIOs are not going to take a meeting with a random startup unless you have reference customers and reference use cases and ROI to show them. So the question is, can startups get started in Europe, in England or France or wherever else you think is a good economy to get started in and build up those reference cases and then come to America? Is that viable?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe there is still, you know, space in Europe, and again, you have to choose your country very carefully in Europe to start startups. I mean, we've got successful startups in Britain or in France, you know, those are part of Europe. So, yeah, there is a potential. There are some challenges in every country in terms of tax, you know, so you have to think carefully about which territory and what market you want to address. You know, one big difference in the European market versus worldwide is people buy from people. You know, we don't, you know, do too much, you know, web technologies, you know, go to meeting. And that's got a massive potential impact on the cost. So not to underestimate the cost associated when you start a business in Europe, because you will need to hire local people. If you want to do business in England, you need to work with, you know, hire your resource from England. You won't have a French salesman being successful in England. You won't have a British guy successful in France as a salesman. So there is a bit of a few variables specific to the market, European market, not to ignore.
So your point is that you have to choose a country that is functional, that doesn't have all these like dysfunctions of banking systems and so forth, and then you need to get local people to do direct face-to-face selling for enterprise deals, and it's not going to be as much as easy to do online selling and get all these online abilities, online technologies to touch people and you know market to people. It's much more of a people-to-people in-person selling market.
You are right. I mean, I think in terms of, you know, focusing on generating revenue, that's a key criteria. But after it's really on the entrepreneur to understand what he's trying to achieve. Some territories or markets are more open to finance, you know, raise money for young startup. And, you know, the British are much more risk averse than the French or Latin, you know, countries in Europe. So if you're an entrepreneur looking to raise some money and grow by, you know, raising the, you know, the, your level of debt, you know, you will have some dimension to look at also. So it's a complex mapping to put together.
So your company on that subject, your company is self-financed. It sounds like you could have raised financing for a long time based on the metrics that you were delivering, but you chose not to. Why not?
Well, it's always first to, you know, it's like getting married. You need to make sure if you raise money, you find the right partner. And they always say the right thing, but you can't date. You know, it's straight away you get married and you give equity away. So, of course, if your market can be exponential and you need, you know, resources, you know, financial resource in a short period of time, it makes sense to bring VCs or, you know, external investors. We had a more stable growth over the few years, and we felt we could, you know, use our own success and the profits we used to generate every year to finance the growth. So far, we have never needed external investment. I'm not saying in the future it won't happen because, you know, it depends on the dynamic of the market. But it, as we say, every organization is very different. It's something to really consider. You have got good and bad money. You know, it's not just to raise the money and give your equity, it's good and bad money.
So you discussed with me earlier that you're looking to do an M&A roll-up of sorts in your segment to accelerate your growth inorganically. So what kinds of companies are you looking to acquire? Have you acquired any? Are you going to raise private equity to finance this acquisition? How are you thinking about this inorganic scaling phase of your growth?
Yeah, well, at least in our industry, and you're right, the market have changed. What is important for an organization like CaseWise as a software vendor is to build an ecosystem, you know, as you said, through partnership or acquisition or raising money to acquire additional, you know, offering. Why, first to explain, you know, why we're looking at or why we're thinking about this is when we work with this organization or customer, they have got an issue to solve. And, you know, or, you know, technology or expertise cover probably 60 or 80% of some, you know, use cases, and we have sometimes to partner, or we have realized over the last couple of years that there are some patterns where we meet, you know, regularly the same player or the same vendor or the same partner. Mm-hmm. So now we're thinking, well, our customer wants a solution from A to Z, so it's time to look what makes sense in terms of, you know, having a more comprehensive solution. So we are doing our homework today, and we're trying to identify the potential target, what would make the most sense to our client.
So you haven't yet mapped the ecosystem to the extent that you have identified, like you don't have a list of six companies that are contenders for potential acquisitions? I'm not asking for the names of those companies. I'm just interested in learning what is your organizing principle of thinking about it.
So, yes, you're all right. We have done, of course, some homework. It's very straightforward. As you can imagine, every time you do a project with a client, you see the same vendor, the same player, so it's not too hard. The complexity is not the least of the potential, you know, partners you may merge with. Is financially and business-wise, does it make sense, you know, because some are great partners, but sometimes they're over-expensive, or sometimes their growth model or their strategy is very different from yours. So it takes a lot of due diligence work, and as you know, that's time-consuming. So we have done the homework, we've got the mapping, and we are checking our assumptions to ensure it's aligned with our global strategy.
Well, and also the, you know, marrying two private companies on stock transactions is very complicated. The negotiations are very complicated because you have to establish a mutually agreeable valuation and who gets what. I mean, it's still not straightforward negotiation, right? Because there's no external party setting the valuation.
You're correct. You know, it's everyone wants what we call a FMV, you know, fair market value, and everyone has got a different perception of their own business, you know.
Sure.
In case of CaseWise, I guess, because we've been running for a few years, we've been lucky enough to get quite a few regular, you know, letter of acquisition, sorry, just of my life. Then we know that, you know, we have got a good indication of what people, how the value of our companies. But you're right, in some cases, it's more complex. People just have got unrealistic market valuation, and that makes the deal impossible.
Well, you can value your company, but then you have to value also the companies that you want to acquire, and they have to agree to something, some valuation that is reasonable.
Yeah.
And are you going to try to do these as stock transactions, or are you going to raise private equity money and do these as cash transactions, which is actually a little bit easier from this negotiation point of view?
Yeah, I mean, it would be case by case. I mean, we are more, you know, of course, you know, a share transaction or stock equity transaction is sort of cheaper if we agree on the right valuation, as you said, so we don't have to bring additional cash and give it more of the value or the current shareholder, but it depends on the size of the, you know, the organization we want to acquire and the value. They may be much bigger than our company, so of course we will have to bring some external parties to the game.
Table, yeah. All right, very good. Well, we'll keep following.